Pop Spotting 197.
Tuesday, January 17th, 2012. Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's TV Tuesday, and like last week, we wanted to highlight a single show today, but this one is already come and gone. It only made it one season, but we're going to tell you why The Late Great Terriers, which was on FX, is definitely worth seeking out online.
Absolutely. We will also have a special announcement from some friends of ours that longtime podcast fans might want to hear, but let's get to Terriers. It was a much-loved show, it turns out, by many of you. Steve B. in Utah, in particular, gets credit. He was telling us from way back in June that we had to check it out. He wrote, "A casualty of dumb American TV viewing habits, I humbly suggest you to watch Terriers, my favorite, all caps, favorite show since Lost." And from that point forward, he would forward to us any article that mentioned Terriers. So we knew he was in love, but, you know, even Jim Watari, Desiree, Axel, a lot of our Comic-Con friends were bonkers for the show. So we finally took the hint and we did check out Terriers.
Terriers was created by Ted Griffin, whose credits include Ravenous, Matchstick Men, Ocean's 11, and Tower Heist. It was produced by Sean Ryan from The Shield, Tim Minear, who works a lot with Joss Whedon. He worked on Firefly, Angel, and Dollhouse.
So a lot of great names were attached, and it did. It is a wonderful show, but as we mentioned again, it did only survive that one season on FX. Only 13 episodes of Terriers exists in this world, which is a tragedy. It's a great show. It was over too soon. So let's talk about why we feel that way, why we are now as smitten as Steve and everybody else. What's the setup for Terriers?
Donal Logue plays Hank Dolworth, and Michael Raymond James plays his partner, Britt. The two of them are struggling private detectives in San Diego. Hank is an ex-cop. He's an alcoholic, and he's divorced from Gretchen, who is marrying another guy who has a sketchy past. And Hank also has a relationship with his brilliant but troubled sister, Steph, who is played by Donal Logue's sister, Karina.
Yeah, Karina Logue, his actual sister playing his sister, which I thought was good. It certainly helped with the chemistry there. And ex-wife Gretchen is played by Kimberly Quinn, but Donal Logue is the lead character. I mean, he is the guy, I think, that charms you from the start, even though he's almost an anti-charming character. Donal Logue has been in a lot of great stuff. In fact, a couple of shows that also were prematurely ended. He was
Knights of Prosperity.
Yes, let's rob Mick Jagger, also known as Grounded for Life, and even The Practice. He's been around. He's certainly one of those Hey, It's That Guy guys, and this was a fantastic opportunity for him to play a leading man. This show, I mean, there's a basic underlying plot. He and Britt are private investigators, and the two of them are a fantastic pair. A lot of the one season, revolves around Hank trying to understand why his good friend, his old friend Mickey, was murdered. You know, there's a big conspiracy with a developer to completely transform this small town, you know, San Diego. But I would say, you know, compared to other PI or crime-fighting type shows, we spend a lot more time than you might expect, and perhaps more than half the time exploring the personal lives of these characters, of Hank and Britt.
Hank is somebody that you don't really want to root for, but you do anyway. We briefly see him as a cop in a flashback sequence, and he's one of those typical movie cops. You know, he's really brash and difficult and hot-headed and bossy. But because of his career, he really lets his life fall apart. He has struggles with alcohol. He lost his wife, and he really got to a very low point in his life, but it was an important one. And I think the place he is in his life that we see, it's very realistic. And I think we've all kind of been where Hank is at some point in our lives.
Yeah, the relationship between Hank and his ex-wife, Gretchen, Kimberly Quinn, is I, you know, I hate to say realistic, but that's the best way to put it. It's believable. It's grounded. It's not the kind of ex-wife relationship you might expect from a cop show, because the ex-wife of any cop in any cop show is the most detestable woman in the world, right? Mm-hmm. Why would she leave such a great guy who's trying to save the world? Well, turns out that Hank is perhaps not that great a guy, you know, maybe very ambitious, but maybe not that great a cop. And she is not an awful person. She is not the villain. She's more than sympathetic. She's human, and their relationship is human. It's uncomfortable. It's awkward, but it's still affectionate at times. It's respectful most of the time. Certainly there are flare-ups. Certainly there is the drama you might expect when you have to deal with dealing with your ex. But again, I think that alone is a reason why I think the Terriers was so compelling, because we know these people instantly.
When we meet Hank, we know that he's learned some things, but he's the kind of guy who doesn't learn things easily. So we're watching him make all of these mistakes, and he becomes very single-minded in bringing down this real estate person, and he gets kind of irrational, and he's really going after this guy to the detriment of all the other parts of his life. But we really want to see Hank bring this guy down.
Right. We probably know a Hank. We know somebody who gets really obsessed with doing something, with revenge. And at the same time, we can say that's probably not a smart thing to do. We're kind of egging him on. We're kind of hoping that it happens. And Hank is that kind of a character. And we should talk about Britt as well, his partner. And he's as much a central part of the show as Hank, or at least the relationship between the two of them is fantastic. It's perhaps one of my favorite. I keep thinking of them as buddy, you know, a cop buddy kind of relationship, mm-hmm. but they're not cops. They're actually kind of loser PIs. But in any case, Britt is compelling as well. He's not always been on the right side of the law. He's in fact a reformed criminal. And again, what I like about him in this show is that you say he's a reformed criminal. He's turned his life around, but maybe not really. I mean, we do have our doubts about what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, we're never really 100% sure of his intentions, because we do see him still interacting with his criminal co-conspirators. He can be very cute and charming, but there are moments where he's very dark and dangerous. Like, for instance, he gets into a fight with his girlfriend Katie's classmate.
Yeah, like Hank, you know, gets fixated on something, whether or not it's true, whether or not it's a smart thing to do, and has to see it to the end, you know. Stubborn, but in a completely understandable way.
The characters have a lot of dimensions and so many layers, but so does the storytelling. Just Britt's relationship with his girlfriend, Katie, we find out how they met and about Britt's criminal past, and the two of them really connect in a very unexpected way, and there's some offhand comments that are made in the first couple of episodes of the series, and they come into focus so nicely with this 1 second shot at the very end of the third episode. The writing is so ridiculously good, and Katie, for instance, we see all of her flaws, but we see all of the good parts of her, and we understand why she does the things that she does.
Yeah, it's about the characters. How many times have we said that about shows that we love? And yet, as I agree, there's a lot of good foreshadowing. There's a good arc in this one short season where things do pay off later on, even when they're mentioned offhand. And certainly that's the sort of thing that rewards marathon viewing, rewards devoted fans. There just probably should have been more of them. And yes, because it's a private investigative couple, a pair out trying to sort things out and make a living, there are a few case of the week episodes, and some of them are pretty darn clever. They're interesting twists, as you might expect from the setup. I would say that some of them are not so, you know, clever and maybe not as wonderful as you might have thought. But just watching Hank and Britt and these people around them go through the motions is fun to watch. I mean, frankly, if the show was just the two of them, these two schlubs in San Diego, and they go to get groceries for an episode, I'd watch that as long as we can sort of follow their conversations mm-hmm. as they go.
Yeah, they have great conversations. There's a really awesome supporting cast, including Rockman Dunbar from right, Sons of Anarchy. Right. He plays Hank's ex-partner, and they have great chemistry, and I love this character, and I definitely like him more than I liked him in Sons of Anarchy this season.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that it's the same guy. It's hard to believe that they're both in law enforcement. Rockman Dunbar is great in Terriers, and his relationship with Hank is not the best one. It's not coming from the most trusting place, you know, ever since Hank left the force, left in quote marks there. But the two of them get off very well being adversarial toward each other. He's a lot of fun to watch. You also have Jason. Jason is Gretchen's new man, actually her new fiancé, the guy she was with after poor Hank, played by Lauren Dean.
Joe Lies!
Yes, that Lauren Dean.
From Say Anything.
Yeah, and again, if you know, Gretchen is not painted with a one-dimensional brush, and I would have to say that Jason isn't either. Lauren Dean does come in and spends most of this one season as that kind of greasy, slimy, untrustworthy, what is wrong with that guy, what does she see with him sort of guy. I mean, he kind of, we're watching Justified now as well, mm-hmm. and there's an ex with another guy in that show. His name is Gary. So I thought that Jason here in Terriers and Gary from Justified are kind of cut from the same cloth, just like, you know, bad dudes. But especially later on in this first season of Terriers, Lauren Dean is given a couple of great acting opportunities because it turns out he's not that detestable. You know, he is the human being. He is deserving of some sympathy. He knows what's going on, and we can see it in his face.
Christopher Cousins, he was Ted on Breaking Bad. He plays the real estate developer Robert Lindis. Michael Gaston plays, he was in The Sopranos, 24. He plays Ben Zeitlin, a local attorney. Together, they're kind of this really evil force, and they're the pair that Britt and Hank spend most of the time this season trying to bring down.
Yeah, they're the baddies, and they're great baddies. I think that Christopher Cousins is fantastic. Michael Gaston, I mean, every time you see him, he's, you know, you know he's bad. He's bad news. I don't think he's ever played a nice guy in his life. So they enjoy the roles, and certainly a good target for Hank and Britt's ire, and you know, kind of picking apart this conspiracy that spends most of the season unfolding. I will say that it's, you know, very late in the show where they kind of reveal what's going on there. I mean, that there's another layer to this onion, and that's another thing that I think Terriers had a lot of guts to do, and certainly the kind of thing that you kind of wish there might have been another season to mm-hmm. see where that might go. Who else was on the show that you loved? There's Hank's lawyer, or kind of ends up his lawyer, even though she doesn't even want to be his lawyer.
Yeah, Mags, played by Jamie Dumbo. I think she steals every scene that she was in. She's definitely not idealistic, and she does not harbor any illusions about Hank or Britt. I think she thinks that they're both doomed.
Right. She doesn't think much of them. She loves them, I think, deep down inside. But when push comes to shove, when it's like, well, we could press ahead with this, it's very important, but it could be very dangerous, what would you do? And I think that anybody else in that role, especially if they were an attorney or connected or knew the landscape, the big picture, they would say, this is worth the fight. This is something that needs to happen. But no, I mean, Mags is very practical and goes, it's time to run and hide. You know, let's not play this game. So she's a lot of fun for sure. I did want to mention that Hank does kind of have a side crew. I mean, the nerds, basically, that he goes to periodically for help. And if you remember the X-Files, there were the nerds that Mulder would go to sometimes.
The lone gunmen.
Yeah, the lone gunmen. These guys are the squatters, but they're very much in that same vein. I mean, a little too precious, I think, but still so much fun to watch that I don't mind that they exist. Certainly high points in terms of some of the humor on the show. So you had Alex Ferney, Alex Berg, and Todd Faison as the squatters. And I think if I had to be honest, I would say that they may not always fit the tone of the show. They might kind of break out of it a bit too much, but they are given some fun lines. They have the opportunity to sort of comment on the action as kind of a geek chorus, and I at least enjoyed that element.
Late in the season, we meet Laura Ross, played by Allison Elliott. She's like a local political blogger, and she's the one that brings about the final showdown between the lawyer character and Britt and Hank.
Yeah, she's interesting. I mean, she's someone, again, that you're kind of questioning her motives or where she's actually coming from. The actress, Allison Elliott, I thought that she was kind of channeling Carrie Ann Moss for a while. Mm. There was some strong similarities to me in how she was moving about. And again, perhaps somebody that might become more important or more significant if there was a season two. There just wasn't. In terms of characters that come and go, or that aren't always there, I mean, technically side characters. You mentioned briefly that Donald Logue's real life sister, Karina Logue, plays his sister on the show, Stephanie. But in terms of performances, performers and actors and characters that have a lot of heart, a lot of depth, and that were part, a key part of making me fall for the show, you know, she turns up kind of late, but she's immediately one of the most interesting. I absolutely loved Stephanie.
She's just brilliant. I think it's very hard for an actor to play somebody who's brilliant and crazy, and she's able to take both traits and display both equally well. I love her performance, and she's one of the reasons why I really hope that someday we'll get a second season. I want to see more of her and Hank.
Yeah, if anything, if there was a decision that I disagreed with, it seemed like that partway through this one season of Terriers, the writers made a specific decision to pull her back a little, maybe because she was maybe dominating the screen too much, but I wouldn't disagree with that. I think that that relationship, and specifically learning how Hank is changing or how he's not changed, how he might be regressing, was very key to the show. She could have gone into really bad Rain Man territory, but I don't think she did. I think she held it back just enough. And, you know, with the end of the show, she's one of the characters that I worried about. I personally felt connected to her and wondered what might have become of Stephanie.
The show does take place in San Diego, which is one of our favorite cities. So yes. I enjoy playing Spot the San Diego Landmark.
Absolutely. The setting is certainly one of its draws as well. San Diego, they spend a lot of time out at Point Loma or Ocean Beach. There's some shots of downtown. There's one scene on the roof of what looks like the Hard Rock Hotel across the sea street from the convention center. It's like, we've been there. That's so awesome. The Ocean Beach Pier, just the golden sunlight, the people. And it's interesting because part of the show does get into discussing the character of small town San Diego, not the big city San Diego. And some of those conversations, like they meet a representative of some kind, and the way he describes why he hates and loves where he lives.
Yeah.
I want to hate and love living in San Diego someday. So that's a great part of the show. But really, Terriers is about Hank and Britt, these two guys that are just disheveled. They're scruffy, a little sloppy. It feels like real life, but just a little cooler. I mean, believably cooler. And you root for them because they are the underdogs. They're the outcasts, but still, I think that what's key, I mean, what makes them so great is that they're not, you know, rebels. They're not fighting the power. They're not trying to make a statement. They're just trying to make their way. So maybe the show was too subtle. I mean, when you're up against zombies on another channel, I mean, maybe you needed to turn the knob up just a little bit.
For me, the cancellation of the show is a tragedy, and it's even more tragic that we weren't on board with this show when it was on, because it's funny and it's charming. The performances are all great. It made top 10 shows of 2010 lists everywhere. And I know that we're not alone. The Twitter buzz since Netflix started streaming the show has been huge. I really think that this is going, it's destined to be a cult classic.
I agree. I think it's on its way there. And you had actually said when it ended, you know, when that final title card comes up, that the cancellation is as big a tragedy as the cancellation of Firefly. I mean, I'm not sure if I...
Okay, put down your pitchforks.
Yeah, I can see it because there was just so much potential there. There was just so much depth and stuff that we could have possibly explored with this show.
I'm convinced that nobody watched the show because the name is sucky. Terriers. It makes me think of the Kids in the Hall sketch. It sounded like
it
could have been the you know, the movie Best in Show, like a serialized version of that movie. Any other name would have been better. Just like Ocean Beach PI or 92107, which is the zip code in Ocean Beach. Anything but Terriers.
I agree that we had no idea. Didn't know even when E! Editor was recommending it to us. I'm like, I don't want to watch a show about dogs. I have this odd memory of like banner ads on the internet, and even the logo for the show is this close-up of a dog's mouth. I mean, it looks like maybe Jaws, but with a dog in it, and just something about the way it was presented, it was not sold well. So as a result, you know, nobody really watched it. It was the lowest rated series that FX had ever premiered. It had an average viewership of like 970,000, and it got as low as 500,000. I mean, I think infomercials or the random fireplace during Christmas has more viewers than that. And the network president said that basically even if it had twice the viewers, it would still be in last place on that network.
Damon Lindelof tweeted after its cancellation sucks, but 10 years from now, we'll still be talking about Terriers.
Well, I'll hope he's right. I will say that unlike Firefly, at least one of the things that we got with Terriers is the opportunity for them to finish a full season, those 13 episodes, and give us an ending, you know, kind of wrap it up well. I think it was put to bed very well. And so when you dive into it, at least you know, and we can now affirm that what you're going to get is a complete, well put together story for sure.
This show has such a great final scene. It's one of my favorite final scenes. No. Britt and Hank they have to make a decision. And I think a person could make an argument for either decision and have it be plausible.
I agree. A great moment. I said, that's kind of an Inception ending. It is a great way to leave the show. I like that the last episode was called Hail Mary. Mm-hmm. I still feel like that last episode of Terriers is a Hail Mary because the way that they leave it, even though it's satisfying and so worth it, they do leave a lot of room for where they might go next. A second season. I think that they have a situation even with Britt that says that if we pick up a year later, it makes complete sense with the story. I agree. Someone should revive Terriers. We've said before, you know, Netflix is getting into sponsoring and funding its own original programming. Mm-hmm. Because I am certain that Terriers is having this huge renaissance on Netflix. I really think that we could like write a letter to Netflix and tell them to bring this show back again.
Let's do it, guys. Let's tweet the crap out of Netflix.
Exactly. Let's bring Terriers back. But if we can't, we hope we made a strong case for looking for it, finding it, seeking it out. It is streaming on Netflix and elsewhere. You can pick it up and it is completely worth your time. It's Terriers that aired all too briefly on FX. Now, before we go, we did want to share a very special message from some friends of ours.
MetroBuzz, a pop culture podcast launched in 2007 by two native New Yorkers, featuring a guy obsessed with a retired reality television show and a girl who possessed an odd fascination regarding a double toilet, which, during its run, succeeded at covering everything in the zeitgeist of internet culture, creating an unparalleled online community, and teabagging a hybrid. MetroBuzz was one of my favorite podcasts, and without them, it's just been so hard. That's what she said.
Hey everyone, it's John.
And Colleen.
I know we haven't been around for a while, we've been locked in a bitter custody dispute over Irish Matt, but we're putting that aside to talk to you guys right now about something very, very important, and that is we are coming back.
Maybe. That's up to you guys.
We're like a prize fighter coming out of retirement. And you know who our opponent is? Autism. Every year, you guys know Jay and Jack do the 30-hour marathon podcast to raise money for Autism Speaks, and this year, we're taking part in it, if you guys want us to.
And if TalkShoe lets us, of course.
Here's the deal. We want to raise $2,000 for Autism Speaks, just the two of us, just Colleen and I, to bring MetroBuzz back. If you guys want to donate, send money to the PayPal email lpdonate@gmail.com. We raise that much money, Colleen and I are back.
That's right. lpdonate@gmail.com. In your comments section, put for MetroBuzz, March 31st to April 1st.
So guys, do it up. If you want MetroBuzz back, yeah, you guys know you've missed us. Be honest. You have to donate. lpdonate@gmail.com. We want $2,000. We know you guys can do it. I know times are tough, but I think you guys have it in you. If we get $2,000 by April 1st, 11 a.m., we're back.
That's right. Thanks for listening. And we hope that you want to listen again.
Talk to you guys then. Hopefully.
Peace.
That's what she said. Well, we here at Pop Spotting know all about the comeback podcast, so we would like to see that happen. MetroBuzz back on the air with your help. Now, John and Colleen were some of the first guests that we had here on Pop Spotting for our Thursday show, so we're only happy to help, and we hope you will as well. The MetroBuzz campaign and, of course, the Autism Speaks fundraiser coming in April.
So, what do you guys want to talk about? Tell us what you want to talk about. Don't hold back, whether you're commenting on a show or you're making a recommendation, we want to hear all about it.
You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net. You can comment on the blog at popspotting.net. But best of all, you can share your wonderful voice with everybody by calling and leaving a voicemail at 815-310-0808.
Tune in tomorrow for Wildcard Wednesday, where we'll try to answer some questions about Hawaii.
Our theme song was created by Dan Pashman of the Sporkful Podcast. We want to say thanks to him. And of course, we want to say thank you for listening to our little show.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Aloha.
Aloha.